Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
We have a great episode for you tonight. We're going to go back to the year of 1999 into Steel City and talk about the 1999 Pittsburgh Steelers. Our friend Harv Aronson is on with us to talk about this interesting team from history and some of the great players that were on that squad. Here comes Harv in just a second to talk.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So as we come out of the tunnel of the Sports History Network, let's take the field and go no huddle through the portal of positive gridiron history with PigskinDispatch.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at SportsHistoryNetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. Welcome once again to the Pig Pen, your portal to positive football history. And welcome to another edition where we get to go back and revisit some Pittsburgh Steelers history, one of my favorite topics. And I have my good friend Harv Aronson here, another great Steelers fan and historian, to join me. Harv, welcome back to the Pig Pen.
Thank you, Darren. Good to be back, always.
Well, we're sure glad to have you. And Harv, told you that I've been being inspired by many people's collections. We've been having some guests on and talking about, all kinds of different football history. And I have a lot of different obscure Steelers items, but I recently acquired a football, and it's not the actual signatures, but it's a game ball that has, I think, every signature of everybody on the Pittsburgh Steelers coaching staff and playing roster of the 1999 Pittsburgh Steelers, including Cordell Stewart on that. And, that 1999 team was not one of their better teams of the Bill Cowher era or of the Steelers history, but it had some interesting players on it and some interesting developments in that NFL season that I think would be worth a discussion here.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you said, they were 6-10. They finished fourth in the division. And it was the AFC Central back then. It wasn't the North yet. They were playing in old Three River Stadium. That's long gone. And they started off the season by winning 5 of the first 8. So it looked like they were on the right track. But then they lost 7 of the remaining 8 games to finish 6-10. It was actually their worst record ever under Bill Cowher, unfortunately. But there is one mark I found out about the 99 team is that they're the only NFL team since at least 1940 at that point to concede so many as 5 safeties in one season. That's something they but
so that says a little something about the offensive line that year, doesn't it?
Exactly. At that time, Tom Donahoe was the general manager. So that's a little interesting. And then, like you mentioned, Cordell was the quarterback for part of the season. He was 5-6 on the season. He did play 16 games, but only started in 12 of those. And his numbers weren't all that great. He threw 275 passes, completed 160. He only had 1,464 yards passing and only 6 touchdowns. He threw 10 interceptions. On the ground, as we know, he likes to run. He did run the ball 56 times, 258 yards, scored twice. And he had 9 receptions for 113 yards. So not one of his stellar seasons, but, he did play a major part of that season.
Yeah. The season was interesting. If you evolve and revolves around the Steelers here, like we're talking about, the Steelers' first game that season was against the brand new Cleveland Browns. It was the return of the Browns to the NFL after, 2 or 3 seasons of when they left for Baltimore, the original Browns. And the Steelers open up the season in brand new Cleveland Browns Stadium. And I can remember, I think it was a Monday night game, if I'm not mistaken, or it was a night game because they had like,
yeah, I think it was Sunday night. Might have been Sunday maybe or Monday.
Might have been Sunday night, but they had Drew Carey. Like his show was real popular at the time. And he was, you know, I think he sang something, you know, Moon Over Parma or whatever the hell he sings for this thing. And they, you know, he got the dog pound all wound up and everything. And the Steelers came in and beat him 43-0. That was kind of, I think Tim Couch was a, you know, rookie quarterback then. And they just, you know, obliterated him. And it was looking pretty hopeful for the Steelers, you know, at that point. And then week two was the old Browns came in, the Ravens came to Pittsburgh. And the Steelers end up beating them by a field goal, you know, late. I think Cordell rallied the troops of like less than a minute left. And Chris Brown, who was a rookie kicker that year, seventh round pick, their last pick of the draft that year, kicked the winning field goal. So there's a name from the past.
Yeah.
Then they lost three games. They lost to Seattle, lost to Jacksonville, who was in their division at that time, and the Buffalo Bills. And then beat the Bengals. So they went, they beat their first three divisional opponents. I'm sorry, they won three out of four because Jacksonville was in their division. And then I don't know what the heck happened. After the bye week, they had a six game losing streak that just, you know, and the Browns, Bengals, Jags, and Ravens all beat them in that stretch. So just got pounded in the division after that and, you know, couldn't get out of their own way. The other thing is, in the 1999, when the Browns returned, the NFC Central was the only division with six teams in it, which was kind of fascinating.
Wow.
I've forgotten about how those look. And so you had the Jaguars, Titans, Ravens, Steelers, Bengals, and Browns. And that's the order that they finished in. Was that the Jags won that division with a 14-2 record that year in 1999. They were only but a three-year-old franchise at that time, 4 years old maybe. So that's kind of a cool thing. And I was sitting there thinking maybe the AFC Central with Jacksonville, and I thought maybe it was only 1 or 2 years if I remember. My memory was poor on that. That stayed that way till 2002 is when realignment happened and when the AFC North was created and took those four teams that we know today in that division. So kind of a cool thing how that went.
Yeah. The rookie of the year for the Steelers that year was Troy Edwards. And Troy Edwards leaves a bad taste in my mouth because I remember on a previous show, we were talking about the award I won and all that. And I had a chance to go to the Super Bowl. And that was the year that they lost to the Patriots, 2001. Mm-hmm. And Troy Edwards was famous for running out of bounds on a punt from Josh Miller. And they had a repunt. And then Troy Brown returned for touchdown. Steelers lose, and he cost me a trip to the Super Bowl because of that penalty. But LeVon Kirkland was the MVP that year. I loved LeVon. He was a great linebacker.
Oh, yeah. God. He was a thumper.
Yeah, he was. And I had actually fortunate enough to meet him at a baseball card show once, or like a trading card show once. He was there signing autographs. Very cool dude.
It was always amazing to go to games and you watch him or you watch him on TV and you see this middle linebacker that's bigger than most of the defensive and offensive linemen. He's a big dude to be playing that position.
Big. And he was fast for his size. I mean, it was crazy. And he was always intercepting the ball quite often. And you'd think that somebody that big, you know, wouldn't be picking off passes, but he was.
Right. Yeah. Most definitely.
I just realized that 99, you know, who was drafted in 99, third round? It's kind of ironic because his son was drafted this year, Joey Porter.
Right. I was just going to go through that. That was their draft was Troy Edwards was their first round pick. Scott Shields, the safety, was their second round. Joey Porter, senior. And Chris Ferris was another third round pick, played tackle for a couple years. Amos Zaraway from West Virginia, great that little scat back they had, a third down back. It never really panned out as a third down back they wanted. I think Mawelde Moore came in and replaced him and sort of signed his death warrant a couple years later.
Yeah.
Aaron Smith was a fourth round pick that year for him out of Northern Colorado. And then you had Jermaine Tooman, Malcolm Johnson, Antonio Dingle, which I think had a cup of coffee, Chad Kelce there for a few years, and Chris Brown, the kicker. So not a bad draft for the Steelers. They had, two stud players on defense and one, and a kicker. Those were your later rounds. So not too bad. They missed on the first and second round, I think, with Edward.
Yeah, absolutely. And Chris Ferris, I remember him being really tall, and I think injuries played a part in ending his career, but I thought he was going to be a really good lineman. And he had the height, but I remember him getting hurt quite often. And I think that's what ended his career with Pittsburgh, is he just couldn't stay healthy.
Yeah. And they had a few good undrafted free agents that year too, that were interesting. Anthony Wright, that you mentioned earlier, the quarterback out of South Carolina, came in and he stuck around for a few seasons. Talented guy. Yeah. Never got to see the field, but he was talented. Corey Geeson, the tight end, who played here and there and lost special teams out to Lane. And long snapper Mike Schneck came out that year out of Wisconsin. And
he lasted a long time as the long snapper.
Yeah, he was probably one of the better long snappers in the NFL for his career. Yeah,
absolutely.
I think he ended up being special teams captain for a couple of years, if I'm not mistaken, too, because he was pretty good at what he did.
Yeah, he was really good.
Yeah.
I'm looking over the coaching staff. We had Kevin Gilbride, the offense coordinator. I don't think he was very well liked at all during his reign and his era in Pittsburgh. Dick Hoke, running back coach. My God, he was there for the Steelers for like 35, 40 years.
Right.
And Mike Mularkey was the tight ends coach, ended up becoming the offensive coordinator.
Yeah, so yeah, just those guys you talked about, Gilbride and Mularkey, both eventually became NFL head coaches. Not that they had great success, but hey, they made it. So I guess you could almost count them from the Bill Cowher tree. Definitely Mularkey, you could. I'm not sure about Gilbride. He was sort of established as offensive coordinator before he came to the Steelers. But just interesting when you see some of these old coaching staffs and what happened with some of those guys. And Bill Cowher, trained coaches too, so had some success with that.
So. Yeah, and I might be getting my ears mixed up, but when we were talking before about 99, I don't remember if it was 99, it might have been 2000, but the infamous coin toss flip at Thanksgiving Day with Jerome Bettis. And I want to say it was 99, but it might be 2000.
Well, I can tell you, I got the schedule right in front of me. We can see if they played the Detroit that year. Where the heck did I do with the schedule?
See if I'm wrong, but I think it was 99. It might have been 2000.
No, they did not play Thanksgiving. Okay. So I think it might have been 98. It might have been the year before.
Okay. I thought that thought crossed my mind when I was thinking, wait a minute, wasn't that the year? But yeah, I guess I was off a couple years or a year.
Yeah. Yeah. But that was a great game too. I remember that,
And that started a losing streak for them. Yeah, and that started a losing streak for them. They ended up losing every game after that. I think it was the last four or something like that. Yeah. So it kind of jinxed them.
That was a game they should have had at Wayne Fonts was the coach of Detroit that game.
Yeah,
and Bettis with the heads tails. And
oh my God, that was so funny.
Official Phil Lockett was the referee in that game, and he had another and I'm not sure that was his fault, because Bettis did try to pull a fast one and say both of them. They end up changing the NFL rule for that game.
Right.
You have to declare before you flip the coin.
Yeah.
And I was, I was a high school official. They changed it at our level too, before our
they
game
did
to do, captain, are you calling heads or tails before I flip this coin? They
say
heads, and then you flip it afterwards.
Yeah, I've watched that over and over again several times, and you can clearly, if you listen to it close enough, Bettis definitely said head tails. There's no question about it.
Yeah, I figured when he did it, and I didn't want to believe it as a Steelers fan. Of course, you want things to go your way, and that was one they should have won. I was, got away from them, and then the season got away from them too. So and that year also,
that 99 team had some really talkable players you can talk about, just for one reason or another. Chris Fuamatu Mo'opala, better known as Fu. I used to love that guy. I actually saw him in a store down here in Jacksonville when he came to the Jaguars. That's a big dude, but he was a tough runner. He was on that 99 team, and you have guys like Alan Faneca. I think he finally made the Hall of Fame, right? Didn't they put him in?
Yeah, he did. The 2021 class. I was out there for that when he went in.
Yep. One of the best ever. Jeremy Statt. I used to like watching him play. Joel Steed. I mean, there was a lot of good players.
You talk about, the Steelers lately have been looking for outside linebacker depth. Well, 1999, mm-hmm. How about this in your outside linebackers room? Carlos Emmons, Jason Gilman, Joey Porter, Mike Vrabel. You know, that's that's some stud. And then you had, you know, Chad Kelsey in there too. You know, so you had five serviceable guys, and three of them are pretty studly.
Yeah.
And you end up cutting Vrabel, you know, after that, who ended up being a pretty good player for New England.
The
Chiefs too, I think he played pretty well for, if I remember correctly. Yeah.
I still scratch my head over them getting rid of him. I just never understood that.
Yeah, him and Shad Brown. I thought when they let Shad Brown go, I'm like, why would you? I mean, that guy was good, you know, he made a difference. Yeah.
Absolutely. Him and his snakes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he wasn't on this team, but Vrabel was. It's kind of cool. But then their quarterback room, I don't know what they were thinking here. You know, Gilbride, but you know, you had Cordell starting and Mike Tomczak as backup, and then Anthony Wright and Pete Gonzalez. You really had no depth behind them. And you knew what he had. He was just sort of vanilla. He wasn't, you know. I just can't believe they didn't add to that room during it. But good players. But, you know, pretty solid offensive line, though, if you think about it. You know, Fanica was young. Yeah, I think he was only in his second year there. Wayne Gandy.
Right.
Brendan Stay. And Dramani Dawson was injured, but was on that team. And, you know, too bad they couldn't have had him, you know, be there as their center. Would Duffy and Sweeney ended up having to come in and do that. But you lose a lot with that, and affects the running game a little bit.
Brendan Stye was a good one. He was really good. He was a solid guard. No question about it.
Yeah, but that defensive line, like you were alluding to, too, Orpheus Roy is on that roster. You know, Aaron Smith as a rookie, Joel Steed, Jeremy Stott. You know, just some, Kevon Henry was on there. You know, it's going to be good, solid defensive lineman. He had some thick players on there. And then, you know, you got, like you said, Kirkland's right behind him.
And I'm just looking over here at the injury list, people that weren't able to play for one reason or another due to injuries. And Justin Strelzik's on that list.
Yeah.
And anybody that remembers that story about him, that's a tragic one.
Mm-hmm.
You know that story, right? How he died, actually, Justin Strelzik.
No, I didn't.
The car accident. Truck accident.
Let's share it with the audience so we remember him.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Justin Strelzik is the guy. He was having some kind of mental issues, and he went in a police chase and crashed his truck and died in the truck accident. Oh, and I'm almost sure it's Justin Strelzik, if I remember correctly. We'll have to look that one up. But I'm sure that's the guy that was on that team that was having all kinds of mental issues, and he got into a police chase and crashed his truck and died instantly, actually.
Oh, boy.
A real tragic story. And this was shortly after he left the team.
Yeah, he was the only one on the PUP that year. Everybody else on the IR. But yeah, the IR list, Will Blackwell, the receiver, I think he was like a first or second round receiver a few years earlier. Dramani Dawson, Chris Ferris, and Jermaine Tooman, tight end, all were on that IR. So they lost some pretty valuable players to injury that year. So I'm sure that didn't help their 6-10 record.
Right. At all.
But just an interesting season, interesting for the NFL, where they added that odd number of teams. Cleveland Browns return to the NFL, six teams in an unrealigned NFL at that period in time, where a time when the Cardinals played in the NFC East. You know, you don't even think about that. And Seattle was an AFC team at the time. So
real quickly, I looked it up, Darren, and I was right. Because this is when it happened. He was it was in 2004 that this happened. And Justin Strelzik was supposed to arrive. This is from Wikipedia. He was supposed to arrive in Orchard Park, New York for a fundraiser. He packed only $2,600 plus in cash and some crucifixes. His cell phone was left at home. He died in a car crash in Herkimer, New York, when he hit a tank truck driven by 60-year-old Harold Jackson, who was also injured in collision while driving 90 miles an hour against the flow of traffic to evade capture by New York State police along the New York State Thruway. Oh, he was 36 years old.
Oh, how sad.
Yeah.
Sad. And I guess, losing some former Steelers at a young age. We just lost Clark Hagen's just passed the other day.
I saw that the other day. I couldn't believe it. I think that might be another topic for one of your podcasts one day. Is if you go back to the 70s up through like the 90s, there is a long list of ex-Steelers that died tragically or young. I mean, there's at least 10 or 15 former players that died in such crazy ways. Really bizarre.
Yeah, it's a dangerous game. It takes a toll on one's body, and on some guys it takes a toll on their mind, and others just have some bad luck of fate that do it. But yeah, that's probably not a bad thing to talk about and remember some of these fellows that are no longer with us for, you know, their great football careers, just to remember them a little bit. But, you know, Harv, really thank you for joining us once again and, you know, sharing this, you know, your great memories of Steelers history and these facts and talking about these players again, and just gets the juices flowing and takes us back almost 25 years ago now. It's kind of scary thinking about that was that long ago, but it's not great Steeler teams, but some fun Steeler teams that, hey, you always got to talk about the fun stuff. And thank you for joining us here.
Absolutely. You never want to reveal your age, but if you think about it, I've been watching them since 1972. So that was a long time ago. So
I'm not far behind you. You're after that was me. So
yeah, but no, I always enjoy being on your show, Darren. And, you know, history is what it's all about. And anytime we can talk history, I'm all for it.
Yeah, and I guess before we let you go, let's give out your shout out to your projects you have going, and so people can enjoy those.
Sure. I'm still working on my YouTube channel, Sports History Remembered. There is a coinciding website that I've started to build for that. And basically what I'm trying to get after, one of the projects I have on my plate, is I want to do a monthly newsletter that will contain all kinds of events that happen in that month. So, for example, I want to try to get one prepared for August. It'll come out in August, and it'll be all these different sporting events, not just football, all sports. Just little summaries of events that took place in August in history. So I'm trying to get that, make that a regular thing. But I do have the channel, Sports History Remembered, and I try to get as many videos up there as possible. I will have some new videos coming up starting on a regular basis. I'm going to do a Monday morning quarterback that will profile a quarterback from history. I'm hoping to get one up this week for, thank God it's Friday, and going to try to focus on one event that took place on a Friday from history. We'll have that. And along with other historical videos that whenever I get some good ideas, I'll be posting videos there. So I have that. And then down the road, I'm hoping to have a Sports History Remembered podcast where we will be talking about nothing but history and all kinds of sports, whatever comes to the table.
All right. Well, we'll look forward to that. And again, Harv Aronson, Sports History Remembered. And thank you for remembering this great Steelers history that you share with us tonight.
Absolutely, Darren. I will talk to you again one day on another podcast.
That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hey there, football fans. This is Ross, the host of the Pigskin Tales podcast. I just need a few moments of your time to talk about the host of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, Darren Hayes. He's expanded the Pigpen to search out information on the history of all team sports. It's a quest to find out about the competitors, teams, and places chronicled throughout athletic history through the uniforms and gear the participants used and wore. And he is taking you, the listener, with him on this educational journey to preserve sports history on the Sports Jersey Dispatch, found here on the Sports History Network. His newest podcast, called Jersey Dispatch, is all based on the jerseys that all the greats used to wear. You can find Darren Hayes and the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, as well as Jersey Dispatch, on your favorite podcast provider multiple times each week. So remember that Darren Hayes, the host of the Pigskin Dispatch and Jersey Dispatch podcasts. It's found right here on the Sports History Network.